Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery. And that is why the Machinery Digest exists. A no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter. I'm Ray Bohax, your host from the Farm Machinery Digest, and we farm over in Hackettstown, New Jersey on Cat Swamp Road. So I want to thank you so much for listening to my show today, and I'm going to do my best to make it an interesting hour for you and an educational hour for you. Not just interesting, but educational. And that is my goal, to basically educate and thus prosper the American farmer and those all around the globe, not just here in the United States, but all around the globe. And I was very humbled this week because, as I said in last week's show, and I've been letting you know that we just came up on our one-year anniversary, and I'm not one really to look at statistics. And I know in any business you have to look at statistics. I mean, just like you have to go out into your field and look at the crop. But sometimes what I've learned from being in business is that if you study things too much in the beginning, that's just as bad as not studying them, because you get either a false hope and a false bravado, or you hang your head down and thinking that this is not working. And so I decided to have my web person who does not only put together my website, but also was the one who puts together the podcast and does whatever she needs to do to get it out onto the internet, which is not in my wheelhouse. That's Susan Moore's wheelhouse. And she's from Moore Good Ink down in Georgia and runs that business with her husband, Victor. But anyway, so I had to check some statistics, and I was, I didn't look at it for about 6 months. And back 6 months ago, we were had listeners in 16 countries, and I was really taken back by that because, I knew we had listeners in Australia, New Zealand, some in England, some in different parts of Europe, but I didn't think that we had listeners in 16 countries. And then Sue told me, no, she looked at it again. Well, looked at it again, meaning the past, not 6 months ago, and we now have listeners in 35 countries. So that is truly, truly a humbling experience to know that there's people in 35 countries listening to me, and I want to thank you all. I obviously don't know where you are, but I want to give a heartfelt thanks to everyone that is listening to this show. And I mean, it just blew me away to think that people are listening in 35 countries. So, hey, what are you going to do? Well, last week I told you 16 countries, but it was really 35. I'd rather have it go that way, right, instead of thinking it's 16 and it's 6. But thank you so much for that, and I thank you so much for your support. And I do want to, and I'm surprised that people in 35 countries can understand this New Jersey accent. But hopefully they do. And, you know, my offer to everyone, I don't care where you're farming or what part of agriculture you're in, is that if I could help you in any way, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer at farmmachinerydigest.com. So my goal is to help farmers throughout this world to prosper. And if you could allow me to do that, I will be very, very, very happy. So hopefully things are going well on your operation around the world. And I know down under, they're getting ready to plant over here. In North America, we're harvesting, and probably in Europe and other parts of the world also. And hopefully things are going real well for you with that, and you have good yields. And, the spirit of a farmer, right? Even sadly, if they're not that good, we always have, it's next year country. no matter who you talk to, it's always next year country, no matter where they are. I know over here in Warren County, it's next year country, right? Next year is going to be that great year, and hopefully it will be. And somehow, by God's grace, we all survive and move forward, right? He gives us exactly what we need, not necessarily everything we want, but what we need, and we can't lose sight of that. But I also want to thank Casey Seymour at the Moving Iron podcast, which is found on the Global Ag Network, along with my podcast, Idle Chatter, is found there also. And he is starting to host, as of I think last week, the Hot Rod Farmer Minute. That's actually, it's 2 minutes long, but I call it the Hot Rod Farmer Minute because it didn't sound appealing, the Hot Rod Farmer 2 minutes. But and that's a little tech tip that I give every week. It's been on Ag News Daily, which is Delaney Howell and Mike Pearson show, which comes on every week. And it's an excellent podcast about the business side of agriculture. Casey does an excellent show about the business side of machinery, and I do obviously a machinery show. So I think we all work very well together. And there's probably about 22 or 23 weeks now I've been on Ag News Daily, and I just started to run some shows on Casey's Moving Iron podcast. So if you get a chance to listen to those, they're about 2 minutes and 10 seconds, 2 minutes, 20 seconds, even though I call it a Hot Rod Farmer Minute. And they're also going to eventually be all warehoused on my website, farmmachinerydigest.com. So thanks to Delaney Howell, Ag News Daily, and her partner, Mike Pearson, and for Casey Seymour with the Moving Iron podcast. So I think that's going to be a little thing for you to check out, some interesting tidbits, or hopefully you find them interesting. A couple other things that I want to just go over again, and it's repetitious, but this is going to be the third week that I am including a toolbox test question, and that's going to be moving forward. So it's not just going to be a short run. We're going to do it as long as we have idle chatter and the people enjoy it. But, you know, keep in mind, as I said in the past two shows, is that I will read the question to you, and there's a new toolbox test on my website every month. And there are five questions, and they're multiple choice questions. And what you could do is you choose the answer you think is correct, you submit it, and then you get the proper answers back immediately. I don't know who you are, so don't be ashamed or what have you about it. And a lot of people go and look at the test, but they're afraid to submit the answers. And that was the impetus also for me to bring this test onto the show, because I want you to learn. And the test is designed for it to be an educational experience for you. And so don't be concerned whether it's farmer A, B, C, or D with the answers. Just be concerned with what you feel is the proper answer. And you know, keep in mind, and I don't want to call myself an educator, because I don't have any formal training in delivering education. So I'm not truly an educator. I'm like a backdoor farmer educator, right? So, but, you know, a lot of people misunderstand what the purpose of a test is. And in most instances in life, I mean, when you go to school, the purpose of a test is you take a test because there's an end goal. You want to graduate and go to the next grade, or you graduate and you get some sort of certificate or some sort of diploma or some sort of licensing, right? You go to school to become a doctor, you pass the test and you're licensed to be a doctor. You go to school to be an attorney, you pass the bar test, you're licensed to practice law. But those particular instances have a defined end game for you to get a license. But there's a side aspect to that that a lot of people don't realize, that a test is meant not so much to show the instructor or the teacher and go, ha ha ha, gotcha, you don't know what that answer is. No, it's meant to show you what you know, and to confirm what you do know, and to tell you what you do not know. And oftentimes in life, the tests that we have are not meant for someone else, they're meant for us. And if we take a test and we get the answer wrong, but then we understand why it was wrong and what is right, that's the most wonderful educational experience. And that's why I always give you an explanation, not just saying the correct answer is A and move on. So I want you to please, you know, take these tests. They're an educational tool. I think that you'll find great benefit in them as time goes on. And the other thing I wanted to just convey to everyone is that the information that, you know, I've said this before on the show and I'm going to say it again. There's nothing, nothing that I'm going to tell you on the show that's going to make you a nickel. And so everybody, they shut off they just disconnect from the show because everybody's looking to make money. No, what I'm going to teach you is how to save money. And remember, in life, it's not necessarily, it's a combination. It's like base saturation and soil test where things have to be balanced. So in life, it's not in business, it's not necessarily what you make, it's what you keep. And what I am teaching you, hopefully, God willing, through my show and through my website and my upcoming seminars and YouTube, Hot Rod Farmer TV channel, is that I want to teach you how to keep more of your money by making proper decisions in the farm shop. I'm not going to make you a nickel, but the thing is that I could have you keep that nickel. And that's more important because you could have the greatest, and I always say this, you have the greatest crop prices, you have the greatest yield. And if you have inefficiencies with your machinery, that flies out the farm shop door. So keep that in mind. But the other thing that I really wanted, I'm using that as a segue into what I wanted to talk to you about for a minute or two, is that the things that we go over in this show, and not just here, anything else, you go to an agronomy clinic, you read something, you go to a marketing clinic or a marketing workshop, or what have you, anything that has that is meant to be educational. What you need to do is come back to your farm, come back to wherever you are, your ranch, your farm. If you're an agronomist, come back to your office. And what you need to do is take someone and then tell them about what you learned. And in this particular instance, I'm asking you to tell them about what you learned on my podcast, not because I want you to drive audience for me. Naturally, I would not mind that. But by you telling someone else, for instance, let's say if we, like today we're going to talk about in the show, is that finding lost horsepower in a diesel engine or why a diesel engine becomes weak. So if you go and if you explain that, the things that we touch on in the show, and it may mean you have to listen to the show once, more than once or what have you. And if you explain that to someone, in your farm shop, you explain it to your wife, you explain it to hopefully someone who cares to listen, not just standing on the corner, you know, in town and just preaching it, but you will cement that in your mind and you will actually learn more by teaching them than by listening. So I ask you to get the best educational experience about any time or anything that you invest in, to listen or go to a seminar or workshop or coming into the winter season, right? And most of the agronomy workshops, all of the everything that's going on in education for agriculture usually happens over the winter because that's when farmers could go. We can't go in the spring, right? So the thing is that take that and then talk about it when you come home. Talk about what you learned. Say, hey, you know, if you go to a soils clinic, say, hey, I'm going to, you know, I really didn't understand base saturation, but I'm going to tell you about it and, you know, tell your wife about it, tell your coworker about it, tell your brother about it, tell guys at the coffee shop. And you will find that it will so exponentially magnify your learning experience. And because the best way to learn something is to have to talk about it or teach it to someone else. And it causes your brain to be able to not only process that, but cement it, and also causes you to look at it in a slightly different way. You know, and without beating this to death, but the fact of the matter is that statistically, and I've said this before, there's so many people, and it's a very high percentage, and it depends on who you talk to. It could be 90% or more, or it could be 75%. But you know, there's a different thing in life in knowing, and I've said this before, maybe last week, there's a different thing in life about hearing something, understanding it, and then implementing it. And the things that you're learning by listening, spending an hour of your life listening to this dry land farmer from New Jersey, right? Who would think some guy from Montana or Western Canada or Texas or wherever in 35 countries can listen to some guy from New Jersey from Cat Swamp Road? But if you take those things and you speak about them, about a subject, hey, you know, you go to a soils clinic, base saturation, explain that each value is a percentage of the nutrient, needs it add up to 100%. that it needs to, that needs to be in balance, because if it's out of balance, then the nutrients won't become available. Well, same thing is happening here when we talk about engines or talk about machinery. If you explain it, you don't have to go into a thesis about it, but just explain it to someone else. And the more you talk about it, the more you explain it, the further cemented it will be in your mind, and then the greater the likelihood of for you to implement it. And like I said, the implementation of things is just as important, actually more important than going and learning. Going and learning without implementation is nothing. It's basically a waste of your time. If you go into some clinic and looking for a free lunch or something, or just to have a jarring session with your neighbors. So, keep that, don't lose sight of that is what I'm trying to say. Don't lose sight of it. And I want you to learn. And everything that I am going to, that I tell you on this show, and I'm not coming, please don't think it's pompous, or don't think it's braggadocio, is real. I'm not inventing anything as I go along. So this is all sound science. It's sound mechanical engineering. It's sound chemistry as far as engines are concerned. It's not opinion. It's not laced with opinion. It's not laced with any agenda. So please take that. Talk about the subject to someone, and then you will find that it will become so entrenched in you, and you will better understand, and you will better implement it. And then over time, you will definitely see a return on your investment many, many, many fold. Because as I said, it's not what you make, it is what you keep. So please, please do that with any educational experience, not just my show. So I'm hoping that you will do that. Alrighty, so now we're going to get into our subject. And what I'm going to be talking about is diagnosing a weak diesel engine. And then next week, I'm going to do diagnosing a weak gasoline engine. So we have basically all of this put together, and you could do gasoline and diesel in 2 weeks. And, the shows are always archived on my website. They're archived on Global Ag Network, Ag Daily, Farm and Rural Ag Network. I always get that wrong. I'm sorry. And many other places. And they're also on iTunes, Stitcher, FM Player, whatever the place. So wherever you go to get it, the most important thing is that I want you to learn, and I don't care where you listen to it. And, and a lack of power on an engine often sneaks up on you. And, it's like gray hair sneaks up on a person. You look in the mirror one day and all of a sudden, oh my God, I'm all gray. And I mean, you didn't realize it. And then one day it becomes very apparent. But when it comes to a diesel engine, that this problem also usually shows itself or reveals itself with increased fuel usage and lots of times a degradation in idle quality. Now, usually the increase in fuel usage is usually in lockstep with a degradation of power. And that's because the engine is less efficient and requires more fuel and more throttle to be able to accomplish the same amount of work. Sometimes you will not get a degradation in idle quality or a degradation in the startability of the engine, but oftentimes it's like a person, like an animal. If you don't feel good, you're not hitting, you say, I'm not hitting on all cylinders today. As an aside, I suffered since birth with celiac's disease, which is basically an allergy to wheat, to gluten, and I love bread. And for when I was a kid, and my mother was, like many farm mothers and everything, she was a great cook. Everything was homemade. She was a great baker. She was a great cook. I'd get up in the morning before I went to school, had bacon and eggs, a half a loaf of bread. I love bread, orange juice, milk, what have you, the old-fashioned, country breakfast, right? And then I would not feel well. And I just felt terrible. And I missed a lot of school as a young child because I would feel lousy. And then two or three hours later, I would feel fine. And they thought that I was, my parents spent a fortune. Sadly, thank God my family had good hospitalization even back then. Spent a fortune going. I had EEGs, electroencephalograms. I had upper GI, lower GI, you name it, I had it. I was still maybe coming from elementary school into what we call junior high, and then many places they call middle school, but sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade. And then they couldn't find anything wrong with me or knew what was wrong with me. So they said it was psychological. They sent me to a psychologist, a psychiatrist, who knows. He gave me an ink blot test, which is called a Rorschach test. And that's a whole story unto itself. I didn't know what to tell him. So I was making up stuff and then forget about it. It was just a crazy situation. And then I learned to live with it as I got older. And then I was, for many, many years, I lived with it. And I just, you know, when you're old, you're able to sometimes deal with things better than you can as a youth. And I knew I would feel bad in the morning. And then it was like a morning sickness. And then sometimes at 8, I felt bad. And then I would just work through it. And then what happened was that, I think it was 1997, when Ford came out with the new F-150, that whatever the new generation, in 97, and they delivered one here to the farm for me to road test. And Ford is excellent. They delivered the vehicles right here to the farm for me. And then they just come and pick them up. And they know that if I'm not around or don't answer the doorbell, to just leave the keys in them, and that's it. And I knew they delivered the car, the truck, and I looked out the window from my office in the basement. I could see the garage where they parked it. And I felt so lousy that I didn't even want to go out and see it. And that was an impetus for me to try to find out what was wrong. And then it was after many, many years, 40 years of searching for this, they found out that I have borderline celiac disease. And the nurse practitioner that I was going through told me, just cut out the gluten. I didn't even know what gluten was. I mean, as a farmer, I should know, right? But we raise corn. I cut out the gluten, and I felt 1,000% better. And I do cheat, because I do love bread, and I do cheat, and I eat pizza, and I eat pasta, and everything. But I'm blessed in the sense that I know when I'm having a little bit too much, all my joints start to hurt, and then I just need to purge for the day. But the only reason why I'm telling you that is that that would sneak up on me, and I would eat a couple of, and then I would feel terrible, and then a few hours later, I'd feel better. And that's also how a lack of power complaint usually sneaks up on a diesel engine, is that if it burns a hole in the piston, and boom, you know, all of a sudden starts to smoke and run rough and has no power. But usually you'll find that it starts to degrade over time. And just like my celiac disease, where I would eat and then I would not feel well and then start to feel better, the same thing could be happening with a diesel engine. So you have to be very in tune with that. And, you know, and the cause of the lack of power, just like my celiac disease, can be very elusive, since the engine sounds fine. And then oftentimes the basic diagnostics test of a compression test or a leak down test, and proves inconclusive. And that's actually what happened with my blood test for celiacs. Nona Wallinson, the nurse practitioner, who was excellent, better than any doctor I went to. And she said to me, your blood test came back borderline celiac, said cut out the gluten for a week and see how you feel. If you don't feel better, come back and we'll keep looking. So, you know, lots of times chasing a lack of power complaint could just prove inconclusive. And that kind of not only adds to the frustration, but doesn't solve the problem. So what you really need to do is understand, and that's what I hope to be going over today. And this is going to be in generalities, because every engine is a little bit different. They have the same, just like every human being is a little bit different, right? They have the same, we have the same body, we have the same composition of our body, but what affects you doesn't affect me. So this is an overview. It's not going to be brand specific. It's going to be an overview of things that will cause a lack of power. But, you know, when you cannot find anything wrong from the normal things that you would check, then you need to keep these tips in the back of your mind. So the first thing that I want to talk about is that fuel delivery. And fuel delivery for a diesel engine to run properly, I mean, just like a gasoline engine, but a gasoline engine is more forgiving. For a diesel engine to run properly, it truly requires the necessary amount of fuel. Now, I'm not saying that next week when I talk about gasoline that that's not true, but if it's a gasoline engine with a carburetor, then it has some sort of fuel reservoir there. But a diesel engine, just like a fuel injected gasoline engine, does not. So we need to have not only the proper amount of fuel and volume, we need to be able to have the proper pressure going into that injection pump and then in turn to that nozzle slash injector. The whole assembly is called a nozzle. A lot of people call it injectors, and I call it injectors, but if you would talk to an old diesel man, all right, it would be a pump line nozzle system versus a common rail. So it was, they used to say PLN, pump line nozzle. So, but we called it an injector, and it makes no difference. The injector is actually the pintle part inside the nozzle, and some people call that the injector holder. So I'll call it nozzle or injector during the show, but you'll know what I'm talking about. So if the delivery is weak, then the engine is not going to be itself. The engine is going to be weak. Now, keep in mind that this is akin a lot to like a, I'm going to use a corn plant because that's what I grow. So I'm the most familiar, but I never grew soybeans or wheat or sugar beets. So, I mean, so particular stages in the corn plant's growth, whether it's V2, V5, V10, what have you, then it starts to go, you know, into tassel, into the reproductive stage. It's going to be more sensitive to the nutrients that are there. I mean, to get the corn plant up out of the ground doesn't require a lot. It requires more moisture and heat than it does nutrients because it's living off the energy that's in the seed. And then once we start to get V4, V5, V6, I'm not an agronomist, and then all of a sudden the nutrients really start to come into play. And then as it starts to go into the reproductive stage and starts to have ear filled, then the nutrients further are more necessary. So the thing is that you may find a diesel engine that has a lack of power under a certain load range. So at part throttle, light load, or pulling this hill with the trailer empty, you're pulling this, I'm using a trailer, whatever, pulling this amount of load, or your tractor, and you're doing certain work. Let's say you're doing some tillage work in the field, and, you know, in the looser ground or the lighter ground that really doesn't have any apparent lack of power, then you get into some heavier ground, you get into a berm or what have you, or a hill, and it starts to show itself. So keep in mind what I'm trying to say is that the lack of power may not be represented throughout all of the operating ranges. It may be only represented at full throttle. It may be represented under a certain load, and or it may be where it's a pig throughout everything. So it starts to be a real pig. I mean, this thing won't even get out of the ground. Even the one won't even get pulled away from a traffic light with this load on. So keep in mind that just like nutrition deficiencies in a plant, it doesn't, and the medical field uses the word presents. So the lack of power doesn't always present in the same way. And that is going to be a very good telltale of where you need to look. Because if it's something very drastic and it's affecting every operating range on the engine, then it's going to be easier to find than say, man, this thing feels like a pig at, you know, with the 1800 RPM and 10 pounds of boost. Whereas it used to pull before and now it's a pig. And before that, it's all right. And then above that, it seems all right. So it's got a mubbly, what we call a mubbly point, whereas about at that range, it's dogging. So keep that in mind. Your first step is to be able to qualify where in the operating state that this lack of power seems the most apparent. And, you know, and in most instances, it's going to work up to that. It's going to stair step up and then it's going to stair step back down. So with rare instances, would you have an engine runs great to 1800 RPM falls flat on its face, and then at 2000 RPM it pulls like a freight train. I mean, that's possible, but it's very rare. So it's usually going to have have some roots going out on both sides of where the weak spot is. Or as I said, it could be weak all the way down from right off idle, or it could be weak just upstairs at the top end. So pay attention to that. But, you know, but the fuel delivery on the diesel is going to be very, 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 the fuel delivery on the diesel is everything. So the thing is that now keep in mind that every diesel engine for most practical purposes has some sort of delivery pump. Sometimes they call it a lift pump that goes to the injection pump. So that delivery pump, that lift pump, however you want to identify it, is going to feed the injection pump. So if that delivery system is weak, then the injection pump is not going to be able to step up the pressure and deliver the proper amount of fuel to the nozzle slash injector. And then that cylinder or those cylinders will be lean. So when, you know, most people think of a clogged fuel filter or corrupted water separator, as far as a lack of fuel delivery is concerned. And that is true. I mean, those are definitely valid things. And those are service items. So if you come up with, you have a lack of power and you look in your notebook and you do a say, man, we haven't changed this fuel filter for a long time. We haven't drained this water separator or changed this water separator for a long time, whatever the type of style that you have, then the thing basically is that it's not a bad idea to do that. And keep in mind that you could get one load of dirty diesel and plug those filters and mess up that or corrupt that water separator enough that even though it's been on there only for 50 hours or 100 hours, that you could cause a problem. So it could cause a problem. So anyway, so you definitely want to, you know, think of the basics. But, you know, I get a lot of letters to me from listeners and readers to the website. I get letters from through Successful Farming, through my website, through the podcast and what have you, and even through Hemmings. I write a column in Hemmings Muscle Machines called Ask Ray, and a lot of farmers read that because they're into cars and they write me for a problem about their tractor. So anyway, I don't put those in Hemmings. I don't think they'd be too happy. It's a car magazine. But everybody, you know, at this particular point, other than changing the filters, and you know, it's not a bad idea if you can, depending upon the filter design, if it's a spin-on or what have you, or it's an element, is that you don't see access to the element, that you may want to cut that open to see what is going on in there. All right, but that's not necessary, but it's a confirmation. It's further data of you seeing what's going on. So, but the point that I want to get at is that, you know, other than some filter changes and some visibles, you know, quick visual inspection of some things, is that you really need to now quantify, meaning you need to assign data, numbers to what's going on. So the thing is that, and that's where it gets to be a little bit more complicated. And the fact is that you need to determine the fuel flow and the fuel pressure. And that requires often a little bit of work. It's usually not that easy to check, and some proper tool, some proper test equipment. But keep in mind is that I just had a gentleman contact me, I think a week or two ago, and it was a Duramax pickup truck, diesel, right, Duramax, and he had a lack of power complaint, and he was, I change the filters, I change this, I change the air filter, change the fuel filter, water separator, blah, 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 the whole nine yards, right? And, you know, at that particular point, if you didn't hit it, buddy, you got to start to assign numbers to this. You got to get fuel pressure, you got to get fuel delivery. And people don't want to do that. They just want to wave a magic wand and they think that they're going to fix it. That's like looking out in the field and saying, well, you know, I don't know what, I'll just throw some nutrients at this. And you just can't work that way. And with the complexity of today's engine, specifically tier four stuff, or even if it's prior to tier four, and it's, you know, a tier two or tier three, but it's got a common rail system or has some sort of electronic controls. You really need to identify, and you need to qualify and put numbers to this, because otherwise you're going to be chasing your tail and spending a lot of money. And as I said, and I'll repeat it, granted, it's very easy for me to sit behind a microphone and tell you to do that, but you need to have the specifications and you need to have the proper pressure gauges and usually adapters to see what is going on, all right? So we'll just leave it at that. But at one particular point, you have to actually put numbers to it. But before you even put numbers to it, there is something that goes on with fuel delivery that a lot of people do overlook. And what it is that, let me get my thoughts together, but it is aerated fuel. And I did a show, I believe, a while back about that. I may not have, or may have mentioned aerated fuel. And what aerated fuel describes is that the fuel stream is not solid, but it is mixed with air. So think of a hydraulic braking system on your car or your pickup truck that has air pockets in it, or a cooling system has air pockets in it. So aerated fuel is a very, very big problem on a diesel engine, because it doesn't have that reservoir like a carburetor or even a fuel injection system on gasoline, that the fuel rail itself is a bit of a reservoir. But aerated fuel is a big problem. And then what happens is that when air is introduced into the fuel, it not only displaces the combustible fluid, which is the fuel itself, the diesel fuel, but causes an ebb and flow of the amount getting to the injection pump or common rail system. You're gonna have a solid stream of fuel. It may not be a solid mass, has air bubbles in it, and then all of a sudden it hits an air pocket, or even if it doesn't hit a complete air pocket, it's not getting the volume and the mass of the fuel that the engine needs to run properly. And then, you know, splashing of the fuel in the tank along with any returned fuel can cause aeration. And it could also be a root cause of, it could be, you could identify, what I wanted to say is that what you need to do is to pay attention. Does the lack of power complaint, is it associated with the fuel level in the tank? That's what I really wanted to say, the fuel level in the tank. And the thing is that because if you have a pickup line in the tank, and it's starting to become porous, and let's say when the tank is full, that's all covered with fuel, then the aeration of the fuel will not happen. And let's say arguably you get down to a half a tank, and part of that pickup tube or that pickup hose, whatever it is now exposed to the air in the tank. It's going to start to suck in some air and mix with the fuel. So the thing basically is that you want to pay attention. Does this, for aeration of the fuel, does this happen when the tank is at half level, three quarters level, quarter level, what have you? That's a very easy diagnostic step. And if you see a drastic or marked improvement in the engine's performance, then your problem is in that fuel tank. And I don't care whether it's a truck, pickup truck, whether it's a car, or whether it's a combine or a tractor sprayer, what have you, is that the aeration of the fuel lots of times happens in the fuel tank. And just from it sloshing around and having a porous pickup tube. So if you suspect air fuel aeration, the easiest way for you to diagnose it would to be install a sight glass or some clear line between the lift pump and the engine. Then you're going to temporarily install this. You could buy some clear fuel line, and you'll probably have to, don't cut anything, whatever you do that's factory. So you may need to take the line and disconnect it and put a piece of clear line in there, or just put a bow in it. You don't need 10 feet of clear line, but I usually like to have a couple of inches of clear line so that I have a good view at that fuel stream. And then what you want to do is that you want to then start the engine and, if possible, run it underneath the conditions that it is acting up. Now, it was an aside to this. There's a lot of technology today and that's available to us inexpensively. For instance, something like a GoPro camera. And you may say to yourself, well, you know, what the hell is Ray talking about a GoPro camera for? But, you know, I farm by myself. So, you know, I can't see what's happening with the planter. I got nobody there to watch. I can't see what's happening with a lot of things. Whereas when my dad was alive, he would say, okay, you go and I'll watch the planter. Let me see what's happening. Let me know what's going on. So if you invest a couple of $100 in a GoPro camera or some other type of camera system, and why I'm saying that, you want something that's easily that you could mount and hook up, is that you could actually put that camera, I mean, this may sound crazy at first blush, right? But put that camera so that you could see that fuel line. You could see the fuel line, that clear plastic fuel line, and then look for air bubbles under that condition. And if you're able to do that without having to view it, because you could get the system to aerate at low load with the engine's idling, or you put something on a PTO and loader, what have you, then that's all great. God bless you. But, you know, sometimes you got to think out of the box. And if, like I say, you know, at first you might say, that's crazy, I'm not going to be putting the camera over in the fuel line. Well, your whole goal is to fix this piece of equipment. Your whole goal is to get the power back. So would you rather do something like that and magnetic mount it and see and get an idea of what's going on? Or would you rather just keep throwing money at it and bring it into town and pay $3,000, $4,000 to find out that you got a porous piece of rubber hose? So like I say, think out of the box. But you know, also don't just think that the air can be introduced into the fuel at the fuel tank. That's obviously one area and a very common area because it's all out of sight. But the air can be introduced into the fuel via crack that the grated pickup tube, as I said, in the fuel tank, a loose fitting. Any place along that fuel line, a loose fitting, it may not be leaking, but it's sucking in and introducing some air. And, you know, a cracked or loose water separator or any other region, a pathway where that, so you have to follow that fuel from the fuel tank to the injection pump and any place along that way that that fuel could introduce, have oxygen introduced to it. And, you know, and you could even, you know, think out of the box, you could temporarily bypass each section of the fuel system until the bubbles disappear. So the thing is that you want to look at that and you want to make sure that you have a solid stream of fuel. And if you don't have the solid stream of fuel, then you're getting aeration and you have to determine where that air is coming from. But a aerated fuel will historically allow an engine to run well at idle and light load, and depending upon the amount of aeration, will give it a lack of power and as the load comes on. And, you know, and think of it this way, like a diesel engine that has gelled fuel, but you get it to start, you know how it rolls and it surges and it just sounds lousy? Well, that's also because the fuel is gelled, but also there's air introduced into that. Because if there's no fuel in there because the fuel is gelled, what is going with that injection pump? Air. So keep that in mind, is that something that you really want to look at and not forget about. And I will repeat it, I know that it is often easier said than done, but then on the same token, if you give it a little bit of thought and go to town and get some clear line and some clamps, it doesn't have to be pretty. You want to be able to get a snapshot. You want to be able to get a snapshot, meaning you've been a window to look at that fuel stream to make sure that that fuel stream is solid. Right now, another thing, we're going away from fuel for a minute, is missing boost. And you have to remember, on a diesel engine, its potential power is going to be key to the amount of boost it has, the boost pressure to fill the cylinders. So the turbocharger is a key component on almost every diesel today, and it's very rare that you're going to find a normally aspirated diesel unless it's like a smaller application, like an UTV or something like that. But almost everything has a turbocharger today. And for it to perform properly, the exhaust must have no leaks prior to the turbo, so the turbo hot side, which is the turbine side, all right? And the air fed to the engine from the cold side, which is the compressor side, must have integrity. Any exhaust leak is going to limit the turbine speed, and in turn, it's going to have a lower boost level. So the thing is that now, if your piece of equipment has a boost gauge, then you want to look at it and see what the boost is at, and you need to become familiar with that, right? So this thing usually runs 18 pounds of boost or 30 pounds of boost, whatever it may be, or I'm throwing odd numbers around. And you say, geez, you know, that it's a little bit low on boost, so you need to keep that in mind. And like I said, the exhaust leak will do that, but while an air intake leak will allow the boost to escape to atmosphere. So on the exhaust side, what's going to happen, the exhaust leak is going to limit the turbine speed, all right? So the turbine, if it's not spinning as fast, it's not going to build as much boost through the compressor side. And then if there is no exhaust leak, then the turbine side is spinning fine, but you have a leaky hose. You're taking the boost, instead of it being put into the manifold, that intake manifold, and in turn into the cylinder, it's going out to atmosphere. So a pinhole in an intercooler, sometimes it's called a charge air cooler, same thing, a pinhole in an intercooler will also bleed a good deal of boost, and a lot of people don't look there, along with a poorly sealing wastegate or a loose or degraded hoses on the induction system. So all of those hoses that connect from the turbocharger to the intake, that whole air path, all right? Anything before that is not going to affect it, but anything after the compressor side is definitely going to affect the cylinder fill and in turn the engine. You know, and many at times I have seen that the engine suffers from a cumulative effect of minor leaks on both sides of the turbo. You have a little bit of exhaust leak, the wastegate isn't sealing properly, it's got some carbon on it, and then you have a little bit of compressor side leakage, intercooler, or what have you, and then all of a sudden this thing becomes lazy. And because of it's a stack up of all these things, that it seems that one day you start to leak a little bit more on the boost side, or the wastegate is got a little bit more carbon on it, and it's one or two or three more pounds. And you know, it's like anything in life, that the stuff that's major, God forbid you get a heart attack, that's easy to diagnose. My celiac disease wasn't easy to diagnose. So the thing is that you need to be able to look for this. Now, I'm going to have you spend a little bit of money, and I think this is a good tool for you to invest in as a co-op tool with some of your friends, because you're not going to use it all the time. But the best way to find any type of leak in an induction system or an exhaust system with any engine is to use a smoke tester. And these, a decent one costs about $1,000 to $1,200. You can go up to $4,000, or you get one for $100. I'm going to feature a smoke tester in my second annual Hot Rod Farmer Christmas buyer's guide. That's going to be coming up for Black Friday for Thanksgiving weekend. It's going to be a podcast and also a supporting article on the website. But a smoke tester, what it does is that it has a unit and uses like a mineral oil that they have. It's non-flammable, it's non-toxic, and uses about 2 or 3 pounds of shop air pressure. And you introduce this smoke into the engine, into whatever you want to check. So it could be into the induction system, the exhaust system. And you got to give it a couple of minutes to go through. And any place that there is the slightest amount of leak, the smoke will start to emanate from. And that's a wonderful, wonderful tool to have. And it saves a lot of time. It saves a lot of money and a lot of effort. And you will be surprised when you smoke test something, how many leaks you had. And then you're wondering where the power went is because you were leaking on the intake side, you were leaking on the exhaust side. So a smoke tester is a wonderful, wonderful way for you to be able to determine what is going on and very quickly and efficiently find where the leaks are. And if you put this all together and you say, okay, I have a leak here, I have a leak here. Now, as far as the wastegate is concerned, if the wastegate isn't sealing, you're not going to see it on a smoke tester. Well, you could actually see it on the smoke tester because with the engine off, the wastegate should be closed. And if you see smoke coming out of the exhaust, but if it's like a semi with a long exhaust or a piece of equipment, it may take a while for you to start to see that smoke there. But you can also determine that. But that is the easiest, most efficient, most accurate way to find. And you could use that same piece of equipment. You could use it on a sprayer. And I mean, not on the engine part, but you could use it on anything. You could use it on pipes in the house. You could use it you put something together, you're running new piping or it's a dairy barn. You could smoke test it to see where the leaks are going to be, or hopefully there's no leaks, right? Potential leaks. But you think out of the box, and then you could use that. Now, so keep that in mind. So we're talking about fuel delivery, fuel pressure, aerated fuel has to be its specifications, the fuel pressure and fuel delivery and volume. And no aeration in the fuel. And then we're talking about a lack of exhaust spinning the turbine to build a boost. So that's like a water wheel. So if the river is low, then the water wheel isn't going to be powerful, right? And so we need to keep that in mind. The other thing we need to keep in mind, and we're talking about simplistic things here. I mean, you could obviously get very complicated. You could have valve lash, and we discussed that a little bit in other shows. You could have valve lash, you could have a problem with the injection pump, but I like to pick the low-hanging fruit first. Most of the time, if you have a diesel engine and it's relatively well-maintained, that those things are really not going to be an issue. It's usually these ancillary things like aerated fuel or leaks on the turbocharger side, the turbocharger intake and exhaust side of the turbocharger. And the other thing to keep in mind now that we have more complicated emission control systems, so we're talking tier 4 on up, all right, whereas prior to this, you really didn't have to be concerned with it with a diesel engine. It would be more of a gas engine thing with a catalytic converter, but you could have a restricted exhaust. So you could have, and most likely the restriction would be in a diesel particulate filter, where the diesel particulate filter is so filled with ash, which is the conversion of the particulates when it goes into regen. Particulates, the big particle particulates get burned into ash. And at one particular point, that filter is going to be plugged with ash. Even if the engine is running well, they usually say about 500,000 miles on a road vehicle or 5,000 hours on an off-road vehicle is the word I'm looking for, 5,000 hours for that, and it becomes filled with ash, and then it is a plug in the exhaust. It's a restricted exhaust, and with that restricted exhaust, the engine cannot breathe. And if the engine does not breathe, then what's happening is on the fourth stroke, which is the power stroke, the exhaust stroke, it's using a lot of energy to try to push that. It's like you with a plug nose, like a person with a plug nose, right? And you're trying to breathe and push that out, and that will definitely impact the power. Now, some tier four systems use a pressure sensor that goes into the DPF and out of the DPF diesel particulate filter and reads what they call a delta P, the change in pressure. And that's what they use lots of times to evoke a regen cycle. But keep in mind that that regen cycle, that if it doesn't use a pressure sensor, but also even if the engine was running fine, that at one stage in that DPF's life, it's going to have to be removed and physically cleaned, which is a procedure you really can't do on the farm. And then because it's just going to build up with air. So think of it like a fireplace. Eventually the fireplace, a corn stove, a wood stove, a pellet stove is going to need to be cleaned. A chimney on an oil burner need to be cleaned because it's going to fill up with ash. And the same thing happens with that. But even if you don't have that type of system on an older diesel, keep in mind that any exhaust restriction, a collapsed internal muffler baffles, something that got in the exhaust or what have you, anything that's a plug that's in the exhaust is going to definitely impact the power that engine has. So, you know, we're getting ready to close this part of the show now before we go into our toolbox test. But keep, like I say, is that think of fuel. A diesel engine is very forgiving. Fuel delivery, solid stream of fuel, non-aerated fuel, proper pressure, proper volume, or think of the turbocharger, and then think of the exhaust. And if all of those conditions, or all of those systems are fine, then you have a problem most likely in the fuel delivery inside the injection pump, which means you would pull the pump off and bring it to a pump shop and let them go through it, or you have an internal problem in the engine. And in most diesels, it's not impossible to have an internal problem. Even if you have some ring seal issues and it has a lot of blow by, it should still make more than sufficient power. She may not be what she was 500,000 miles ago, but it's not going to be a real, real dog. It may be a little bit lazy. But what I have found is that usually it's a cumulative effect of the things that I discussed. It's aerated fuel, low boost, and you put it together and the engine becomes very, very soft or very, very lazy. And it doesn't mean that you have to spend a lot of money, all right? Because you, as I said, in most instances, it's ancillary components and they're not even failed. They're just leaking. So if you have any questions on this or any comments, please feel free to call me. You could call me, send me an email. I'd be more than happy to talk to you on the phone at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. So now we're going to get ready to go into our toolbox test question. As I said earlier in the show, we're working on test number one, and this is going to be question number three because this is going to be the third show that we have a toolbox test on. And I'm very proud to tell you that the toolbox test this week is brought to us, not me, not you, us. It's brought to us by AgroLiquid Fertilizer, and it is perfectly calibrated crop nutrition, superior quality, superior delivery, and superior results. And those results are yield. And I can attest to that because we are an AgroLiquid farm. So without any further ado, I'm going to give you a chance to put your thinking cap on, and we're going to get ready for the toolbox test. But first, only after the Hot Rod Man sings to us. That's Tex Rubinowitz from Ripsaw Records and the song Hot Rod Man, which was featured in the movie Roadhouse 66. So he is the Hot Rod Man and I am the Hot Rod Farmer. And that other button, I pressed the wrong button. That's why you heard that drum roll. So still new equipment blues, right? Hey, I'm just a farmer. I'm not an audio engineer. So I ask you to please forgive me for that. Alrighty. So we're going to get our question. As I said, I'm going to read it to you so I don't get off on a tangent here. And it says, you are looking over your combine, getting it ready for harvest, and notice that the aluminum radiator has a number of small pinholes and is beginning to leak. You smelled coolant when you put it away last year, but thought nothing of it. You pull the radiator out, and it has small holes in different places, some in the tubes and others in the tank. You figure it is best just to get a new radiator. You do not know where the pinholes came from, so you ask your farmer friends. Alrighty? So basically, the problem is the radiator is leaking. You pull it out and you see small pinholes in all different areas, the tubes and the tanks. So farmer A says that the machine has a bad ground circuit and it is causing electrolysis and making the holes. Farmer B told you that mice and field rats are nibbling on the aluminum over the winter since you found a nest near one of the holes. And that's, you know, that's a problem, right? With agriculture out in the country. Farmer C says he's well convinced that the antifreeze is bad and rusting the radiator. And Farmer D told you not to buy that color combine, right? So, hey, we got the color issue here. So think about that. And then what we're going to do is go into our special delivery section. And we have a letter here from a gentleman, I think, in Ontario. And then we will come back with the proper answer. So as we always know, who've been listening to the show, that special delivery is brought to you by Firestone Ag, a company that was founded by Harvey Firestone, a fourth generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. I mean, Harvey was a farmer before he was anything. Until he died, he was still a farmer. Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today and lives on with their 23 degree tread bar design, their new Evo tire, AD2 technology, IF and VF tires, and now the Firestone of replacement tracks. So if you guys got a track machine that's looking for, and you're going to be needing tracks, just look at that Firestone track. I guarantee you will not be disappointed. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. So, okay, so let me see now if I could find my question here without making too much noise with the papers. I could get used to this new microphone. Okay, and the person says, hi, this is Harold from Ontario, Canada. I just bought my wife a new car, and it has start-stop. The engine shuts off for traffic lights. And then, if you don't understand what start-stop is, anybody who has a newer vehicle, it actually was originated with hybrids. And when you come to a stop, there's an algorithm that it has to idle for so long, and depending upon the electrical load also, that comes into the algorithm, and it'll actually shut the engine off. And as you release the brake pedal on a Ford, start to release the brake pedal, as it sees movements, a change in brake pedal position, it starts the engine back up. All right? It's still in drive if it's an automatic, what have you. All right, so he says, I find it annoying, so do I, but anyway, is there anything I should be concerned with? We like to keep cars 10 to 15 years, especially since they're so expensive. I agree. I love your show. No place else am I able to get in this kind of information. Thanks so much. So thank you, Harold. Thank you for watching, listening to the show, and thank you for your letter, and thank you for the compliments. Yes, start stop is, as I said, is a technology that was originally found on hybrids, which are gasoline electric cars and now trucks, and it can be a bit of annoying. The thing is that most systems today have some sort of button on the dashboard that you could shut the system off. In most instances, the system, when you shut the ignition key off and restart it, that it'll re-evoke, so it needs to be shut off every time. To answer your question succinctly, do you think it'll cause a problem? Do you think it's going to be problematic down the road? I really don't know. They test a lot of this stuff. It is more complicated than you would want it to be, than not having the start-stop. But what I do suggest to people is that you have to look at how many start-stop cycles that vehicle has for the use it's going to get. So if you lived in town and it's going to stop at every traffic light, and in 10 miles it's going to shut off and start and shut off and start and shut off and start, in 15 minutes it's going to shut off and start 15 times, then what I would probably do is I would not use the system as much, and I'd get into a habit of shutting it off, because it does stress the battery, and usually most of these applications have what they call an absorbent glass mat battery, not a typical wet cell battery, and it does stress that, and it does stress the starter, but the starter is a heavy duty starter. So that means 15 years from now, it's an expensive starter, but it is a heavy duty starter. So if I was sitting in traffic or I was on the interstate and there was traffic and I was pulling, I would definitely, cancel the system and shut it off. I wouldn't be overly concerned with it. If you're a typical farm operation where you can go into town, it's going to shut off one or two times and it's not going to shut off again for another 50 miles. I wouldn't be concerned with it. I know in New York City, we're like 60 miles from New York City, a lot of taxi cabs have it. Most of the guys shut it off because they find it annoying. But the other thing I want to say to you is that I would probably, if you're going to go through a lot of shut off cycles, start stop cycles, I would probably use a synthetic blend oil instead of a synthetic oil, because a synthetic oil tends to run off the parts quicker, sooner, faster. Not that if you're sitting at a traffic light, it's going to run off so much, but a synthetic blend has a, it's called the wettability, and they'll stay on the parts longer, the bearings, so when it restarts. But I really can't answer your question because time will tell, but I would not be afraid of it, and I don't believe that you'll have a problem 10 or 15 years from now with it. If it does, it'd probably be the starter or the battery, because everything else is software. So hopefully that answers your question, and let me know 10 years from now. And congratulations on a new car for your wife. That's great. I love when people are able to do that and move forward and have a successful farm operation. So, all right. So before we end today, we have our question. And remember, the question from our toolbox test, which was brought to you by Agro Liquor with music by Tex Rubinowitz and Ripsaw Records. All right. The correct answer is Farmer A. So Farmer A is correct. The combine has a weak ground circuit, and somewhere, weak ground circuit somewhere, and it is causing electrolysis. The electrons are finding a ground path through the coolant and are eating away at the aluminum radiator. If the ground is not repaired, the new radiator or whatever part that has the hole in it will fail in the same way. So whenever it's very important, for if you have a heater core fail, a radiator fail, anything like that fail, that you look at it, right? Even an intercooler, if it has a water cooled if a liquid to air intercooler. And if you see a series of pinholes someplace, then that vehicle, that machine has a problem, a bad ground. If you see corrosion someplace, then usually you were not good with taking care of the antifreeze, and the supplemental coolant additives have been depleted. But if you see a pinhole someplace, and that's the reason for that heater core or that radiator or a water pump or an intake manifold, if it has coolant going through it, you see pinholes specifically in aluminum, then you're experiencing electrolysis, and you're only putting a Band-Aid on it by replacing that part. If you don't fix that ground circuit, you're going to have that same problem reoccur. It may take 5 years. It may take 5 months. It's not going to happen overnight, but you need to understand. You need to be a forensic mechanic. You can't just take parts off and say, oh, it failed. Oh, it must be junk, and throw it out. If in the cooling system, pinholes is electrolysis, and you need to take care of that. You ready? So listen, thank you so much for listening. I greatly appreciate all of you. I thank you again for everybody that's listening around the world. It's truly, truly a humbling, humbling experience for me, this guy from Cat Swamp Road. So listen, you have a blessed continue on your harvest. If you're listening to this then, if you're listening to it afterwards, I hope and I pray that you had a bountiful and safe harvest, and know the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved, beloved America, and hope you could tune in next week. Have a great and blessed week. Bye-bye.